So yeah, I'm working with Beatrice and Juan on improving semi-analytic spin precession with knits. So the idea is we have a system like this. We have two black holes, both of them have spins, they have some orbital angular momentum. And we care about this system, frankly, because this is what real physical systems look like. They black holes have non-zero spins. So we care about systems. We care about modeling systems with non-zero spin. And so in order to test theories, we have to take these gravitational wave signatures that we get and compare them with kind of pre-computed waveforms. And in order to do this comparison, you need to generate a large number of these kind of compare these waveforms that you'll compare to your gravitational waves. And so, you know, there's kind of this delicate balance. You need them to be accurate enough that you can actually test your theory, but at the same time, you also need to be able to generate enough of them. And so you need to be able to generate them quickly. And so semi-analytic evolutions are nice because they're both accurate and fast. And you might be asking yourself, well, why are they really that much faster than numerical? And it's because they're semi-analytic. They don't have this kind of building up truncation error that you get in numerical evolution. And so you can get away with not evolving as many points, and that makes you significantly faster. And you have a slight sacrifice to accuracy, but that's kind of our goal here, is to improve the accuracy of these semi-analytic evolutions. Okay, so there's already an existing semi-analytic solution. And so this semi-analytic solution was developed in the context of a spin precession average. So your evolution has kind of three distinct timescales: your orbital, your spin precession timescale, your radiation reaction timescale. They've averaged over the orbital timescale, and we're not going to touch that. They've also averaged over the spin precession timescale. Okay. And so the issue is that doing so is kind of like making an assumption. And so there's an error cost that comes along with this averaging. And so our goal here is to kind of reintroduce the effects of the precession, reducing the error. And in order to do this, we're going to use near identity transforms. Okay, so Philip described these in the last talk. The idea is that you introduce these oscillating terms. So you have your orbital, your total, your spin, and then you have your precession phase, or your precession angle, sorry. So you introduce these oscillating terms in order to cancel oscillating terms in your evolution equations to make the evolution just the averaged evolution. And then when you want to go back, because it's a near identity transform, it's quite straightforward to invert it. Okay. So yeah, as Phil mentioned, we use these to cancel the oscillating terms. So there's kind of three main steps. And so to give kind of an intuitive idea, which I think helps imagine what's going on. So the initial step, transforming those initial values, takes your kind of initial point and shifts it down towards its true kind of average value. And then what you do is after this, you evolve your knitted variables. And so this is kind of evolving along the average. And then when you want to go back, the inverse knit kind of re-adds in the effects of the precession. Okay. And so it turns out that if we do the knit, so in purple here, you have no knit, and then in green, you have the knit. And so at first, the knit seems to work very well. Okay. But later on, it doesn't work so well. And as Phil mentioned, in principle, knits work very, very well, even into the late evolution. So why isn't it doing this? So we kind of came up with a few ideas. Maybe it's a secular evolution, but that doesn't really make any sense. It's still, you could still see that's going down towards zero, so it's still making contact. So how could it be a secular error? In principle, maybe there's something wrong with the knit, but it turns out that's not the case. And what actually ends up explaining this error is that so when we do the inverse knit, we use the precession phase that is kind of inherent in Katerina et al.'s solution. And so if the precession phase had some kind of secular error to it, what would happen is at first, the knit would work very well. It would cancel it because the precession phase still lines up because the secular error hasn't kicked in. But as you get into later times, the phase of the oscillations won't line up and the knit won't cancel it as well as it should be. And so you still have this large error that you're not really doing anything about. And so we can kind of confirm this just by looking at S. So if we look at the kind of full numerical S in yellow and the semi-analytic S that you'd get from just running Katarina's evolution, you can see that there is in fact a phase error and it turns out to be not insignificant. So what actually causes this? So if we look, we can see, yep, there's a lot of error that builds up. Just for comparison, it gets up to like 60% relative error here. So what's causing it? So to understand this question, we need to understand how they actually evolve S to some extent. And so the equation for S, you simplify it a bit, you don't write out as many terms, it kind of looks like this. And so you have an equation for S squared, and on the right side, you have a cubic. And the cubic has three roots. We call them S plus, S minus, and S three, okay? And so it turns out when A, B, C, and D, you can solve this exactly. Or when they're constant, you can solve this exactly. So you get this, you have some Jacobi elliptic, which has some phase psi, and then it has some characterizing value M, okay? And so when A, B, C, and D are constant, the roots of this are constant, and so M is constant. But it turns out that when A, B, C, and D aren't constant, so the way that they solve is they just plug in the non-constant values of J and L into these as though they are constant, okay? Turns out that when they're not constant, you have to contend with this derivative of M. And so it turns out that this isn't the evolution of psi, that you have this secondary term that corresponds to that M derivative. And it turns out that while the derivative of M is quite small, this term isn't insignificant because it relies on the current phase psi. So it's this almost exponential correction. And so it matters a lot the further in that you go. So after correcting for this, S looks significantly better. Remember, it was up to 60% error, relative error at points. Now we're well below 1% relative error in S. And if we look back at J, we see that, yeah, it looks a lot better now. The phase ends up lining up a lot better, even late into the in-spiral, well enough that now you have to contend with the secular error at the next order, okay? So kind of to wrap it all up, where we lie now is we've done all this. So we've done the knit and inverse knit for J. We've done this additional kind of phase correction, which is almost kind of a zeroth order if these are first order in the oscillations. This is almost a zeroth order correction. So something that you definitely needed to be corrected before anything else. And then all that we have left is we have to do the knit and inverse knit for S and the precession angle phi. Okay. So thanks for listening. Any kind of questions?
Thank you. So we have a question from Leo, please.
Hi, Michael, nice talk. So I feel like, okay, since you're comparing against the work by Katarina and collaborators, I'm guessing that this is in the post-Newtonian context, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so in that case, I guess what I would like to understand is the relationship between the knit that you're doing and the fact that the conservative spin dynamics are actually integrable. So, I mean, we showed this in a paper back in December. And so I feel like, I don't know, have you thought about whether what the knit is doing is actually just performing the coordinate transformation to the integrable variables?
To answer your question, I think I've seen this a little bit. I don't really have an answer. I think it would definitely be something interesting to know if it is just doing that.
Okay. I feel like, sorry that this is no longer a question, but a comment, but yeah. I think that by using the integrability of the conservative dynamics, we should be able to do much better than needing to do, like, there shouldn't be any precession averaging or orbit averaging or anything at all. So everything will happen just on the radiation reaction time scale.
I see that Martin also has a comment related to this. Please.
I just want to say, yes, Leo, essentially when you do the NITs, if you're starting from action angles at your zeroth order, you're finding your next order action angles, and therefore the integral variables.
Okay, thank you. If there are then other comments, we can continue discussing on Slack in the channel.